Last but certainly not least, it's Gail Dines.
Thank you. Well, I'm going to talk, yes, about pornography, but not specifically, really, until tomorrow about the nuts and bolts of the porn industry, although I will start going into that this afternoon. I'm actually going to talk about the issue that just went on in this debate, and I'm going to argue that it is indeed the male gaze, but it is women's internalisation of the male gaze, and that's what we have to kind of figure out, how we get rid of all of this stuff. So I'm going to begin with the notion of children's media. It's a myth. There is no such thing as children's media. All media is children's media, OK? They see everything. So when we start talking about standards on children's media, I want to start saying we're missing the boat. Now, to understand that, let's think about the world that some of us grew up in versus some of the younger ones. And I'm going to be very generous here and say those of us who are over the age of 35... We grew up in a print-based culture. That means the dominant form of communication was the printed word. Now, those of you under that age have grown up in an image-based culture, which now means that the dominant form of communication is the image. However, we have a big problem. When we were in a print-based culture, we developed some immunization to the seduction of eloquence of the printed word. We have no such immunization to the seduction of eloquence of the image. The image speaks in ways that nothing else has ever spoken. So let me give you an example, OK? Now, I say to my students, OK, look at this. This isn't real. She's not real. She doesn't look like this in the morning, trust me, OK, when she gets up. It's all airbrushed. Nothing's real. However, even as I am standing there telling you over and over again it's not real, how many of you are still comparing yourselves to her? Right? So this is the problem with images. They never lie, even when they lie. Right? So now begin to think about what this means. So let's get into the reality of the younger children. And basically, I would say anyone really in their 20s now, the MTV generation come of age. And I want you to think about something as well. When television first started, do you know the screen used to change every 20 seconds? And then it went to every 14 and then every second. Do you know today, for media geared towards children, it changes every 1.5 seconds? The brain simply cannot deal with that amount of information in any rational form. So now we have a problem. We have an image-based society, and we have the majority of people who live in this image-based society are completely image illiterate. And the bigger problem is that the image is controlled by corporations who employ the very best and most sophisticated psychologists and sociologists and marketers. It is literally like taking candy from a baby. OK, so we have to begin to think about what this means. Now, what I want to do is to walk you through the visual landscape of children. And I'm not going to go to Sesame Street or any child images like that, because this is the visual landscape of all of us. Now, what do we notice? What we notice is the visual landscape is dominated by a young, toned, thin, usually white woman. She is everywhere, this woman, okay? And if you are a woman of colour, if you're lucky enough, then often you're even more hypersexualised than white women, okay? And tomorrow I spend a lot of time talking about the hypersexualisation of women of colour because of the roots it has, specifically in America, in the legitimisation of slavery. So let's think about wandering through this world, the dominant image controlled by media for specific corporate interests. Because remember something else. It is absolutely central to capitalism, international global capitalism, that every morning women get up, look at themselves in the mirror and think they are fat pigs. It is central because I want you to think of every industry that is dependent on women thinking that. Right, you have the diet industry, you have the food industry, you have the cosmetics industry, and then you have all the allied industries that keep that going. Do you know what would happen tomorrow to global capitalism if people, women looked in the mirror and said, you know, I look pretty good, right? You would have to reshape capitalism. Now, I know how these images work because when I was writing my book, Pornland, shameless plug, it's for sale over there, when I was writing my book, okay... And I was reading, poor me, 10 years of Cosmopolitan, and I'm going through this magazine and I'm going, I hate it, I hate it, I hate it, I want to look like that, I hate it, I hate it, I hate it. Mm. It got into my head. You can't help it. And this is the power of imagery, OK? So I don't want to suggest that in any way what women are doing are looking in the mirror and making a rational decision. This is a gaze that we have internalised because there's no other game in town. It is the only game in town. And the younger you are, the less games there are in town. So let's talk about what it means and how you think about images. Now, I have to tell you, I am actually married to one of the smartest men I've ever met, but he's completely image illiterate, completely. Mm-hmm. So when I brought this home and put this on the table, he said to me, and these were his exact words, he said, why are they using the same woman 8 times? OK? Now, let me say, you know what? He's wrong, but in a way, he's right. Yeah. Because they are all the same. Because women in media, they have no past, no future, no wants, no desires, no history, no goals, no aims, no aspirations. They are a series of body parts delivered up to us. And as long as they meet a very limited standard of what it means to be a woman, they are indeed all the same. And when feminists talk about the media objectifying women, this is what we mean. We are objects, nothing else. When you think about people you love in the world, I bet it's not their toned stomach that you think about first and foremost. But in the media, that's it. Now, let me tell you else something very bizarre. Do you know that they reckon only 1 in 10,000 women have the body proportion to actually be a model? Because you need certain proportions between shoulders, hips, waist. It's 1 in 10,000. Now, think about this. Think about the fact that all we ever see are abnormal women. And by virtue of their visibility, they become normal. And then look around you at all of us normal women, but by virtue of our invisibility, we're abnormal. Right? No wonder we don't know what we see when we look in the mirror. How is it possible in this image-based culture? And I also want the women in this room to think two things. I ask you to think two things. I ask you to think, number one, what do you think you have lost by this? Because I want you to look around you and think to yourself how differently you would feel about your body if you had never, ever seen a picture of a woman in a magazine. The only images you'd ever seen were real women. Look around you, all of our bodies, we all make sense in our own way. But in this image-based culture, it doesn't work like this. And let me tell you, if you think you have lost something awful, I cannot begin to tell you what my students who are 18 to 22 have lost. And then I cannot begin to tell you what my wonderful niece, an 11-year-old, has lost. Right? This is terrible. So, anyway, let's talk about how media images work. There is a concept in media literacy called the reader inscribed in the text. Now, look at their faces. All media images are made with a specific viewer in mind. So, who is the viewer then? Before you answer, do you think they're speaking to their mother, saying, let's go for a cup of coffee after the photo shoot? So, who are they speaking to? Men. And what are they saying? Fuck me. Right? This is what I call the fuck me look. Would you agree? Now, we all know it's a fuck me look because every woman in this room, I bet you, could do the fuck me look. Yes? Do you know what it looks like? Come on, I do it for my classes. All day. I tell them, shout instructions at me. And of course, you know, we go into this stuff. Now, what's very interesting is I then get one of my male students to come up to do the fuck me look. And it looks ridiculous. Now, why does it look ridiculous? Let's think about this. Let's break this apart. Part of being hot for a woman is that fuck me. Yes, the fuck me. But that's not hot for men. What's the hot look for a man? Fuck you. Okay, now we have a problem. Just think about this, because this gets very unfunny. Because what happens now is encoded into female sexuality is female vulnerability, and encoded into male sexuality is aggressiveness. It is actually encoded into the very core of what makes women hot and what makes men hot. Now, take the fuck me look for women, take the fuck you look for men, throw in alcohol and a porn culture, and what have you got? Okay, I can tell you what you've got. You've got 1 in 4 women raped all over the United States of America. Now, I am the mother of a son. And I, as a feminist, refuse to believe that men are born rapists. What men don't know, And I'm telling every man in this room, and I'll tell men everywhere, feminists are your best friends. We are the only ones who believe in your humanity. And even as all the evidence, you know, mounts to the contrary, we continue to believe that you are not born rapists, you are not born murderers, you are not born any of these things. We believe you live in a culture that is training you to be all of those things. And any one of us who has boys knows that we fight that culture and we keep that culture away from our beautiful, sweet little boy who is not anything like the culture tells him. Okay? So, this is a serious problem in this society. And I want to sort of take you through and figure out how we're going to sort of deal with this. So let's talk about the fact that, you know, most of these women we don't know. And the objectification and the stripping away of the humanity, this is the standard image. This is what all groups who are in power do to the oppressed. You know, blacks become niggers, Jews become kikes, gays become fags, and women become cunts. It's a very critical thing to do as a way to socialise the oppressor into not seeing the oppressed as human. Okay? It's a key method. Now, so these women are just, you know, a bunch of legs, whatever, whores, bitches, cunts, you name it, whatever you want to call them. Okay? But notice when we do even know who these women are, look what they do to them. This is Vanity Fair. This is from the year, last year before the Oscars. Now, these were all up for the best actor or supporting actor. So would you all agree these are women at the very, very peak of their career? Now look how they're dressed. It doesn't matter, does it? Right? And think of him, every single one of these. I don't know what makes me crazier. The fact that they're undressed or that they're dressed. I don't really know what makes me even crazier, to be perfectly honest with you. Right? But think about it. Even though she's about to, you know, be up for an Oscar, she's just like all the others. And this is the reality of being female in our culture. And I'm going to argue that the younger you are, the more inescapable it is. Now, let's talk about what it means to live in a society where your role models are Lindsay and Brittany and Paris. Now, I want to tell you, and how to explain this, I want to tell you about what the original title of my book is. My book is called Pornland. But actually, I had what I thought was a way better title. But the publishers refused to do it. And the original title was called Stepford Sluts. Now, don't you think that's great? I did, but they wouldn't have it. Okay, so let me tell you how I was going to start my book. The first chapter was going to be that in 2006, they remade The Stepford Wives. Okay? And it was a disastrous movie. It was with Nicole Kidman, you know, and all of these. Nobody went to see it. And my argument in the first chapter of the book was going to be, look, of course nobody's going to go and see a movie, Stepford Wives. Why? Because the premise that the perfect woman is on her hands and knees waxing the kitchen floor is completely ludicrous today. The perfect woman is still on her hands and knees. She ain't waxing any kitchen floors in that position. And she's the one waxed as in full Brazilian wax. Right? Now, think about this. The roboticized, generic, formulaic Stepford wife that controlled our mother's generation has morphed into the roboticized, formulaic, generic Stepford slut, which is controlling my students' generation and those of you who've got children. So let's think about this. And let's begin with very important talk about Paris Hilton. Now, she is kind of the laugh line, the punchline, am I right? But let's think about this. She's an 18-year-old girl. She's not known very well. You know, she's got a small-time celebrity at the time. And suddenly, her ex-boyfriend leaks a sex tape. Rick Salomon, who was her ex-boyfriend, was 13 years her senior and married at the time. She went to court to try and stop him. And she lost. Now, I want you to think of the humiliation. Right, that movie, One Night in Paris, went on to be the best-selling porn movie for 2 years. Can you imagine the humiliation? Now, she did what I think a lot of women who have traumatic histories do. Right, when you have that trauma, you do two things. You either never go near a guy again, or you say, fuck it. You want to call me a slut? I'm going to be the best slut you've ever seen. You, in a very traumatic, twisted way, own that. Does that make sense? And that's what she did. Now, the problem with this is that Paris Hilton can wear the slut label with pride because her millions act as an upmarket cleansing cream. You put that slut label on a working-class white girl, you put that slut label on a girl of colour, They can't walk away with that. And that's what's so interesting about all of this. What's so interesting here is that what studies show is that should you get labelled as a slut when you were a kid, number one, that label follows you everywhere through the rest of your life. And number two, the girls end up with very similar post-traumatic stress disorder symptoms as do rape victims. Higher levels of alcoholism, drug abuse, depression, anxiety, all of those things. And in fact, what I would suggest is that being called a slut publicly is a kind of collective rape of one's identity. Mm. Right now here's the problem. We live in a society where girls are told you have two choices. You are either fuckable or you're invisible. Right? Because when I say that with my students, there's a gasp in the room. Because that's the world they live in. Fuckability and invisibility. And I've got news for all you women in here. You all age out of fuckability. Right? I don't care how fuckable you look now. Aging out is the reality of it. But let's just supposing you're a young woman. Right? And the only way you can be visible is fuckability. So let's think about what this means. So now you're in this position. You are told you have to look like a slut. You're told you have to dress like a slut. You're told you have to act like a slut, but not get labelled a slut. How do you pull that off? How do you decide what the line is between slut and non-slut? And you know what's even worse? You don't get to decide that line. An ex-boyfriend puts a page up on Facebook about you, or a jealous girlfriend puts a page up. So you lose complete control. So when we hear this bullshit about young girls being empowered, let me tell you, it is ridiculous. Right? And what I'm going to do is to kind of tear that apart now to show the reality. Now, take her. She is probably one of the most well-respected actresses in the world. Would you agree, yeah. Nicole Kidman? Okay. She's got three children. And she is, by all intents, a serious mother, am I right? Do you think she wanted to do this? Do you think she thought, this is what I want? You know what happened? She's aging out of fuckability. And her handlers must have gotten together and says, listen, honey, you want to stay current? This is what you have to do. And this is the reality for her, who's got no more sense at 50 than she had at 20, okay? And has continued to do this. And let me tell you, right, if I hated Madonna, which I do with a passion, if I hated her more about 2 years ago when I read an interview with her, actually in England, because I live in America, and I was in England, she had the cheek to say, I don't let pop culture images into my home because I want to protect my daughter from it. And I thought, you fuck up everybody else's daughter, right? But your daughter, you protect. How outrageous is that, for God's sake, okay? She understands the... Now, let's talk about how this comes down, how this is writ large on the body of a kid. You all know Miley Cyrus, yes? Hannah Montana? Okay, this kid, she's now 18 at the time, she is a billion-dollar commodity. Billion. I mean billion. She was Hannah Montana from Disney. Have any of you got kids who watch this? Right, she's huge. Now, she turned, I think it was 15, and this Hannah Montana is squeaky clean Disney. Disney owned Hannah Montana. They owned Miley Cyrus. You have a problem. She's aging out of squeaky clean Disney. And they had to keep her visible in the world of Rihanna and in the world of Lady Gaga and Beyonce. So they got together with this brilliant marketing plan. And what they did with the help of Annie Leibovitz from Vanity Fair is they did a photo shoot of 15-year-old Miley Cyrus with bedhead. And then the next one with a father. That's her father. Yes. Now, let me say, of course, there was an outcry, which I'm sure they were all prepared for. And do you know what these fuckers had the cheek to do? They got her, 15-year-old Miley Cyrus, to go on TV and apologise to her fans. As if she came up with this idea. Right? They hid behind her all the adults in her life and she went on and she apologised. Of course it was all bullshit. Why? Because this was a very carefully crafted plan. Because a year later, in Elle, this is what comes out. 16-year-old Miley Cyrus. Now, if anyone ever sees her stuff now, you will see that she is as visible in the world as Rihanna and Lady Gaga. She has gone from squeaky clean Hannah Montana to slut Miley Cyrus. And this is the reality. And when I say slut, I don't think there's such a thing as a slut. I want to make that clear. Right? This is a social construct used to police women. Okay? Now, you end up, we saw images, the girl in this is actually 7 years old. This is the French, yeah, seven. There was a big outcry in France after this. Now, let's begin to think theoretically what this means. And let me tell you, the person who gave me the best theoretical framing of the effects is not a PhD in communications. It was actually an incarcerated child rapist I like to call Dick. Now, Dick was in Connecticut State Prison, and Dick was in there for raping his 10-year-old daughter. Yes. Now, Dick had been through all of these, you know, self-help and all these therapy groups, so he had the language got. And he turned to me and he looked me in the face and he said, the culture did a lot of the grooming for me. Now, you all know what grooming is. I'm supposed in this world you all know. Yeah, the way that a perpetrator gets the kid ready. And then it hit me. Bang. It was like I leapt out of my seat. We live in a perpetrating culture. Yeah. Rather than an individual perpetrator training an individual victim to see themselves as a legitimate victim, we now have an entire pop culture perpetrating against young girls getting to think of themselves in terms of slut. And is it working? Did you all have the slut walk here? Yes? Have you all heard of the slut walk, or do I need to explain it? Right, what happened in Toronto, a policeman said that if women didn't want to look get raped, they shouldn't look like sluts. At which point, some young women in Toronto said, OK, how are we going to protest this? We're going to do a slut walk. And this caught on all over. And the slut walk was to dress as, look, slut pride, slut sayers. The idea was the way we fight violence against women is we own our inner slut. Now, if you can't get your head around this, it's for very good reason, because it's fucked up, OK? So let me tell you what happened in Boston. There was like 3,000 women, young women, went on the slut walk, right? Dressed, you know, like this, looking so-called like a slut. And the speaker there was a woman called Jacqueline Friedman. Has anyone heard of her? She's a very big third wave. She's like the new feminism, OK? Now, this is how she ended her talk. She ended her talk by standing up and she said, women, stand up, be proud, fight against violence against women, be who you are, stand up and say after me, I am a slut, I am a slut, I am a slut. You had 3,000 women shouting, I am a slut. There was no irony in it whatsoever. Now, do you understand what the internalization of patriarchy is when you get young women to think that the way to fight violence against women is to claim your sluthood? Right? Now, the same week, the same year that was going on, the same summer, right, very interestingly, there was another huge thing going on in America, and that was Dominique Strauss-Kahn. Okay? Now, it's exactly the same time. You've got slut walks all over the United States of America, and you've got Dominique Strauss-Kahn. Now, Dominic Strauss-Kahn raped, and he did rape. The forensic evidence is without question. He raped a young African maid. Now, will you please tell me for 1 minute, okay, how, had she said that she's a slut, this would have helped her? Right? Think about it. A young African maid gets raped by the head of the International Monetary Fund, and her defense is, I'm a slut, right? And what got me the most was that not one member of the slut walk, because everyone knew, everybody who's in the anti-violence movement in America knew that Dominic Strauss-Kahn's wife, Anna Sinclair, who is worth billions, was going to buy her off. We all knew this was going to happen. And everyone was waiting for the DA in New York to drop the case because there was going to be about a $10 or $15 million loss payoff. Where was the slut walk? Why weren't they outside the DA's office saying, don't you dare drop this case? Did they drop the case? Yes. He's now also being indicted in Paris for trafficking in prostitutes. Do you know what Dominique Strauss-Kahn's job was? He was head of the IMF. Do you know what the IMF is meant to do? It's meant to give loans to women and children all over the developing world. They say that is the key to developing women's health. The head of the IMF, who has a history of rape and of trafficking in prostitutes, and who is meant to be looking out for women's economic lives in developing countries, that who Dominic Strauss-Kahn is. And then we wonder why we're in the trouble we're in. Now, this is Joanna Angel, who is actually a pornographer. And she was interviewed in a magazine called Details. And you know what she said? She said, and she makes porn, hardcore porn. And she said, the girls these days, they just seem to come to the set porn ready. Okay? So we're in a really, really bad situation here. And I'm going to talk about porn ready because you know what? We live in a culture that gets the men porn ready as well. Now, tomorrow I'm going to give a much longer talk about the ins and outs of how the porn industry works and how it goes after young boys and men and everything. But I want us to begin to realise something, right? Boys are victims of the porn industry. And I'm going to show you just a bit some of the pornography that they get introduced to. And I want you to think of how an 11 or 12-year-old, because we know from studies that the first age of interfacing with hardcore porn on the internet is 11.5 years old. So I want you to begin to think about how a boy who is developing what psychologists call their arousal template, right? You can see, figure out what that is, okay? So, first of all, how big is the porn industry? They reckon approximately it's over $12 billion in America. Okay, just to give you an idea, that's bigger than the box office film industry. They reckon it's over $97 billion worldwide. Now, I want you to think about pornography not as fantasy, not as fun. Think of it as an industry. And this is very important because I'm going to explain why. But this is Andrew Edmond, who is president of a porn company. And he said, when he's talking about how people think about porn, he said, a lot of people get distracted from the business model by the sex. It is just as sophisticated and multi-layered as any other marketplace. We, meaning the pornographers, operate just like any other Fortune 500 company. Now, again, I'm going to go into the details of how it operates tomorrow. But you have to realise that this is an industry now, right, that interfaces with venture capitalists, with banks, with credit card companies, with software. It is now bang smack in the centre of global capitalism. Once you have an industry with that power, that gives them political power. You understand? Economic power buys political power. Now, how do we understand the industry? There is a concept in architectural studies, which is now in business studies, and it's called the dominant design. And what it argues is that as an industry matures, they develop this thing called a dominant design. Right? And now, the dominant design of the mature porn industry today are two types, features and gonzo. Nobody in pornography talks about softcore. Why? Because softcore has migrated to pop culture. The industry does not make softcore. You can't really find, maybe a few studios here and there, but nobody's really making it. So when we talk about how the industry works, features and gonzo. Now, I also want to say one thing as well, is that often people say, well, how are you defining pornography? Okay? Well, let me tell you something. If the industry makes it and calls it pornography, if men buy it and jerk off to it and call it pornography, that's a good enough definition for me. Right? I don't think, if we're having a conference about cars, nobody would drive me crazy about how we're defining a car. Am I right? It's that thing with four wheels with a steering wheel, you know? Right? When you take an industry definition, as far as I'm concerned, you look what the industry produces and then you analyse it. Would that seem reasonable? It only seems to be a bunch of academics who are having trouble trying to figure out what porn is. Okay? Now, the two major things, features and gonzo. Now, I want to say features of those type with tries at a storyline. But in reality, okay, it's not really storyline. What it is just hardcore porn. Now, in pornography, the gonzo, which I'm going to introduce you to, because the gonzo porn is the kind of porn, okay, that men use alone. They use the feature porn when they want their girlfriends to get porn ready. So, for example, when I interviewed a lot of men, they say they use the feature porn a lot because they want to introduce anal sex to their relationship, but their girlfriend doesn't want it. So they show her feature porn with anal sex, and they kind of watch her to monitor if it's about time to bring anal sex into the relationship. What the industry says is gonzo porn, which I'm going to show you. Now, first of all, the first thing about gonzo porn, you never, ever, ever hear the word woman. But you will hear cunts, bitches, cum dumpsters is one of their favourites, okay? Sluts. Again, the problem with gonzo porn today is it is so hardcore that you cannot allow for the man who is jerking off to it to look into the eyes of that woman, right, who is in pain, and they're not good actresses, you can see they're in pain. You cannot allow him to look into her eyes and see a human being because that will kill the erection, stone dead. So it's a cunt, right, cum dumpster. She's not like the women he knows, she's different. Now, let me introduce you to the kind of things they do. You can define gonzo one way is by the sex act. The number one sex act in gonzo porn is gagging her. Now, what they do is they put the penis so far down the throat that it activates the gag reflex, so she's choking. They also put a huge amount of mascara on her so that the mascara, you see it drip, so you can see the tears, because these men like to see real things. She is choking. In some cases, as she's choking, they hold her nose, right? So she is absolutely choking. And let me give you an example. I didn't bring too many images today. Tomorrow there's more images. So this is what they have on Gag Me and Then Fuck Me. This is a promotional copy. Do you know what we say to things like romance and foreplay? We say fuck off. This is not another set site with half a wet wieners. We take gorgeous young bitches and do what every man would really like to do. We make them gag till their makeup is running and then they get all other holes sore, vaginal, anal, double penetrations, anything brutal involving a cock and an orifice, and then we give them a sticky bath. This is the promotional copy. Now, this is very clever. Because you're 12 years old, you put porn into Google. You want breasts, am I right? You're not looking for this. And then look at the challenge they throw out to the boy. They're saying to him, we take gorgeous young bitches and do what every man would really like to do. This is socially constructing him at that. He doesn't know he's meant to like this. He's 12 years old. What does he know? And he is being told, you want to be a man? This is part of being a man. And you tell me what 12-year-old boy is going to say, I can't deal with this, right? And I think of my boy, who's in his 20s now, but I think of my boy, had he been 12, and he would have freaked. Can you imagine? And so let's talk about the things. The standard porn today in gonzo is one woman, three men. She's being orally, anally, and vaginally penetrated. And I mean pounded away, pounding, right? As they're spitting into her mouth, slapping her and calling her a cum dumpster. And the last scene is the three guys ejaculating. She's dripping in ejaculate. Okay? I watch these films. Let me tell you, she doesn't know what to do with herself at the end. Right? She lies there and you can see she can't even get off the floor. Right? She has been assaulted. Now, one of the biggest things they do is anal. Pounding anal, because in pornography the job of anal is to hurt her. And I'm going to read you another promotional copy to a very, very popular website called, the website is owned Anally Ripped Whores. We at Pure Filth know exactly what you want and we're giving it to you. Chicks being ass fucked till their sphincters are pink, puffy and totally blown out. Adult diapers just might be in store for these whores when their work is done. This is the promotional copy. Now, I want to say something very clear. Everything I'm going through now is mainstream porn. I don't deal with the worst. I can't go near the worst. Everything you've got here, I got to in 15 seconds of typing porn into Google. All free. If I get 15 seconds, you can be sure the average boy's got 12 seconds, right? So this is... Now, it's very, very hard to really think that this is where we've got... Am I right? You think, how is this possible? Right? How did we get here? And do you not agree that this is a stealth attack on the culture? Because how many of you knew this? Right? Now, the future of porn. Let me tell you, we're in a very, very difficult situation. And I've got loads more to say, but I notice I'm running out of time, so let me hurry it up. In an interview, this is Jules Jordan. He's a gonzo guy, producer. He said in an interview, he said, one of the problems today is that we cannot keep up with how extreme the fans want. Now, let me tell you, experimental psychologists that started in the 70s and have gone on today, and we have hundreds of studies, show absolutely, categorically, the more porn you watch, the more desensitized you become. So now the porn industry has sowed the seeds of its own destruction. They have gotten so hardcore, so fast, they don't know what to do. Because these guys want more. But remember something. They don't want to get into illegal stuff because they're all above board and legal. I like to call them pimps on Armani suits. These guys are big capitalists. And literally, they have done everything they can do to her without killing her. There's nothing, I don't know. And I've studied this for 20 years. I don't know what else they can do. And you haven't seen, trust me, anything. So the question is, what do they do next? Well, tomorrow, I'm going to talk about what they do next. Tomorrow, one of the places they have gone is what I call legal child porn, okay? And now just to give you a quick synopsis that I'll talk about tomorrow, is how the porn industry basically in 2003 got the 1997 Child Pornography Protection Act overturned, which means now it is legal to have women in porn who are 18 but look 12 or 13. It's perfectly legal. I'm going to go through the ramifications of that tomorrow. So Jim asked me to end with some what can we do? Well, there's, you know what? There is... I loved what everybody said today, but there is only one answer to all of this, and that is massive social change. I cannot give you any answer that you or you or you or you can do. You know why? Because you and you and you can't do anything. It's only us who can do something. You cannot fight a global capitalist industry or any global corporations as you, you and you. It's not possible. So what we need to think about is how can we build an international movement that refuses to let the pornographers hijack our culture. How are we going to do that? And one crucial thing is a feminist movement. Now, this is Maxim, and this is how you cure a feminist. And he says you start here and you end there. Maxim is a men's magazine that hates women. And my argument, as every feminist would argue, is we start here and we end there without the cigarette, OK? Now, feminism... But when I say feminism, I don't mean a half-assed apologetic feminism that thinks stripping's empowering. Right? I don't mean that. Because when I joined the feminist movement, we never talked about empowering. We talked about liberation. And there's a huge difference. You know why? I am so fucking empowered, I don't know what to do with myself. I've got race privileges, I've got class privileges, I am so empowered, it's unbelievable. But that means shit for the women who work 2 to 3 jobs, who are being battered, who are being raped, who have to do this shit. It means nothing. My empowerment means nothing. I joined a movement that was about liberation. And let me tell you, when I do this, I include men as well, because as I've said before, we are your best friends, absolutely. Because we think the pornographers are unfair to define you as a life support system for an erect penis, and that's all you are in pornography. And we feminists, we think you're worth more. So to end, what I'm going to say is when I was on a Canadian broadcast, I was on Canadian Broadcasting Company and I was being interviewed by the journalist. And the journalist, he said to me, Gail Dines, he said, aren't you pushing a boulder up a hill? And my response to that was, yes, of course I'm pushing a boulder up a hill. That's what you do to make the world livable. That's what the civil rights movement did. They pushed boulders up hills to make the life worth livable for people of colour. It's what the labour movement did to make life worth living for virtually all of us who aren't in the 1%. It's what the feminist movement did to make life livable for women. You push boulders up hills because you make life livable. This is an enormous boulder. And what's at stake here is not just pornography, but everything else that we have talked about. The obesity, the marketing, the destruction of childhood, the destruction of the culture, the destruction of the planet. I actually do not think we have an option but to push this boulder up a hill. Because otherwise... You know what? You might think that you can negotiate this culture, but do you think your children can? And do you think your grandchildren can? Because I don't think my future grandchildren are going to be able to negotiate this. So I leave you with this idea that there is no individual answer. I wish I had a 10-point individual answer. But what I do have is a great movement called Stop Porn Culture. We also have a great movement here, which Julia, stand up, Julia, so everyone can see from Object and from, what's it called, the other movement? And Julia will be here and is actually speaking tomorrow to tell you what to do. We have started to build movements to take this on. It is the only answer. And if we don't do that, then you can decide that you want the pornographers to come in and they define who you are sexually. Do you want them to define what our culture is? Because if you do nothing, this is what is going to happen. So my argument would be we have to fight back as a collective who refuses to negotiate with them but keeps in our mind what we really want, which is basically for all of us a world worth living in. Thank you.
You can see why Gail was last in the programme, because you can't follow that. Absolutely fantastic. And I'm sure you've got some questions.
The book's on sale at cost, £10. And it's not available in the UK in bookshops. It is available. It's on Amazon.
What are you trying to do, destroy my career?
Yeah. No, I'm trying to increase your book sales, Gail.
No, it is available. It's available on Amazon.
Okay.
Right. questions. No, I know. Yes.
Can I just ask, in terms of, I mean, there's also cartoons, pornography, cartoons.
Japanese, the Japanese, yes, yes.
Oh, I can't remember what they're called. The main.
The manga.
Yeah.
Yes, so you have the cartoon porn as well. Is that also in terms of pushing the limitations of what a human being can do?
Because with cartoons, you've got no limits to what you can represent. But let me say also, do you know in Japan, it is not illegal to be in possession of child pornography? Right? Child pornography is legal in Japan. And I think part of that is because of the caricaturing and the cartoon, it has pushed the limits of what is acceptable. So, yeah, all of this, you've got to throw it all into the mix. Also, which we didn't talk about, and we were talking about at dinner, is all the really violent computer games as well, you know, Grand Theft Auto, and where you can kill prostitutes for points. I mean, it's the mix. You know, one porn image is not going to have that much of an effect, but you throw it all in and you get a porn culture.
Okay. Somebody over here.
I just wanted to ask you, I mean, what you were saying was very disturbing and upsetting, especially for someone who's got teenage boys. And I know, I'm sure they're watching porn. I've put all the parental controls on and what is on the channels like Virgin? Virgin's got porn channels on and you can't get them off. I have tried everything to get them off. And even though you have to pay to watch them, then... but you can still watch the trailers from 10 o'clock, and the trailers are really explicit. Anyway, what I was going to say was, what do I say to my teenage boys? Okay. Because I know they're watching it, and I don't know what to say to them.
Okay, so, and tomorrow I'm going to talk about the long-term effects of watching this, right, which are just awful for your boys. But let me tell you what I said to my son. You know, first of all, for those of you who've not had children and are about to have children, you start media literacy literally the day they're born. Right, you front load. Because remember, by 13, you're the most stupid person who's ever walked the planet anyway, so they're not going to look at you or listen to you. So you do it when they think you're smart, which is in the beginning. So I did it from the moment to the point. Let me give you a great story of just how well it works. So my son was 4 years old, and I go into the living room and he's watching National Geographic because we were very careful what we let him watch. And he's sitting there and he's going... And I said, what's the matter? And he said to me, they keep saying man and his environment. Well, what about women and their environment, right? This is at 4 years old, he's criticising National Geographic. So it's absolutely... Anyone who tells you it's not doable, it's doable. But let me say what you say. You cannot say to a teenage boy, don't watch porn because it abuses women. It's not going to fly, OK? And this is what I said to him when he turned 11, I think it was about 11. I said to him, and he knew what I did, but of course we shielded. I didn't show him porn or anything. And I said to him, look, I said... You know, you're going to go out into the world, you're going to go to friends. I said, you know, maybe you'll look at porn, maybe they'll show you porn. I said, I can't be with you all the time telling you what to do. I said, and you know what? You really don't want me there watching over your shoulder. You know, they don't. Developmentally, they don't want you there. So I said, but I want to tell you. I said, and I can't tell you what to do, but I'm going to give you a way to think, and I want you to think about this. I said, you are 11 years old. We don't know if you're straight, if you're gay, if you're bi. We don't know what your sexuality is. You don't know what it is. I said, you are going to grow into it in ways that make sense for you, in ways that are authentic for you. I said, but if you look at porn, you are going to hand over that which is not yet yours. You are going to give it to them to shape. And your sexuality is too important and too precious for you to hand over to these people who don't care about you and just want to basically take money from you. So I think the thing to say is this is something that belongs to you. You don't know. Who knows what their sexuality is? You know, people will say to me, well, if I can't use porn, what do I do? I don't know. It's none of my business what's your sexuality, right? But the one thing you want is people's sexuality. It grows out of your authentic experiences and desires and relationships and just things that make sense to you at that point. And the problem with the corporatization and commodification of sex is, you know what it is? Pornography is to sex what McDonald's is to food, right? You understand? It's the same thing. And then, and again, people, if I was coming to talk about, you know, the fast food industry, people wouldn't say, well, if I don't eat fast food, will you give me some recipes? I'd say, go and cook. I don't know what you like to eat. I don't know what you like for sex. Of course, there are certain things around integrity and bodily stuff. But you've got to begin to think about these things of what makes sense. And this is what you have to say to your boys. What makes sense to you? But you give it to them and they have got one model on offer, one hamburger, that's it, with or without fries, but that's all it is one hamburger. And I think that's a crucial way to get them to own their sexuality. I also want to bring another concept up, which is sexual integrity. I say to my students, I say to them, imagine you are dating a boy, right, a male, you know, and they're 18 to 22. I said, imagine, and you really like him, but he's made absolutely no moves on you sexually. And then you go out one night and you decide you want to move it along a bit and you kind of touch him a little bit. And he turns around and he says to you, I really like you, but I'm not yet ready to commit to a sexual relationship. And they all burst out laughing. And I say, why are you laughing? He said, well, he'd be gay, obviously. So I said, OK. I said, why is it funny for us to expect men to have sexual integrity? What has gone so wrong in this culture that we define masculinity in terms of anything he can, basically, to be crude, anything he can, you know, push his dick into defines him as a male? How did we get to that point that that's what masculinity is? And that's what I used to say to my son. I used to say, every decision you make about your penis, you make with your head and your heart, because it's not a separate part of you. It's connected into your entire body. And when you have to be a decent person with integrity, that's across the board on everything that you do. And the good news is he's now 28, and I said to him recently, so, you know, we're talking about porn, and he said, well, Mom, you pretty much ruined that one for me. So that was good. So it works. It does work.
Great note to finish on.
What?
And for those of you like myself who's got a 14-year-old son, I'm getting home as quick as I can. And additionally, for those of you who haven't got tickets for tomorrow and are wishing you had, there are still some left. And thank you so much, Gail.
Thank you. Thank you very much.